Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. We're running a little late today, so I'm going to be a little bit briefer than usual, but I have something important to talk with you about. I like to read the New York Times pretty regularly, most every day. Every once in a while, there's an article which really resonates with important ideas that we celebrate here all the time. The particular writer is a fellow named David Brooks. Have you heard of David Brooks before? Some of you have, yeah. I really like this fellow. He wrote an article called What Romantic Regime Are You In? So part of this sermon is for the youngins among us who are seeking and finding love. And so I want to talk with you from this article, but then there's a direct correlation to Purim and to even larger issues that are very important to us. So what David Brooks says very briefly is, and he puts it in terms of regimes, and he quotes a young writer who grew up in Russia. And she said, there, love is a matter of fate, of passion, of just letting it happen, and then almost celebrating the pain that inevitably comes by making horrible choices. And he didn't put it quite that way. In other words, the Russian mentality is suffering is something that you bear under, and it's noble, you know. Bang, noble, Russian, suffering, like that. And then he contrasts that, and there are obvious flaws with that approach, and then he contrasts it with what he calls the regime of choice. And he says, this is what's characteristic in America. And what you do to find someone to love is you have a list of qualities, right? And the person that you're looking for has to have to be able to check off each of those qualities, because the most important thing is you and what you want and what you feel is important to you. And to make a long story short, he says that that is an absolutely self-defeating way to approach love. Instead, he commends to us the regime of covenant, the regime of covenant. And what he says here, and again, just for the sake of moving ahead, I'll just explain it very briefly, but the idea is real love, if you want to really find love and for it to last, you have to think in terms of covenant. You have to think in terms of what the two of you do together in life, a vision that's bigger than you, is more important than your individual needs, and your partner's needs are more important than your individual needs. I've married some of you, so you know my speech about this, but just to reiterate, the idea in real love, romantic love, is to have a vision beyond yourself that you both agree to, that your partner's needs are more important than yours, and if you live that way, you got a shot at real love, real romance, the kind that doesn't disappoint, so you have to suffer a lot. Now, that isn't to idealize anything. Suffering and challenges of life are real. But David Brooks commends this approach, the regime of covenant. Now, I read that and I said, well, that's perfect as we talk about Purim and as we talk about the things we talk about weekly. But in the realm of romance, it really does work. I'll say this, I don't like to talk a lot about, you know, personal things too much, but you know, Sue and I have really tried to do it this way. No joke, we really have. It's not something quite so premeditated. It just, I don't know where it came from. I think maybe we got some good teaching early on that I forgot, but anyhow, we really try and live for something bigger than ourselves, sake of the, you know, the community here, and for the sake of building, maturing Messianic Judaism. And I really feel from her that my needs are very important to her, and I think she feels it from me. And the result is, it's been a happy 43 years. It's been a real good time. Yeah, we had one major fight. This is no joke. This was, and now I'm probably guaranteeing we're going to have a fight on the way home to services today, but but you know how that goes. But no, it was June 1974, and it was the only one we've ever really had. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't disagreements. We're not talking Ozzie and Harriet here. But when you get up every day and you ask, how can I make him the happiest guy in the world, or how can I make her the happiest woman in the world, then it kind of just flows, you know? And it's not because anyone is a moral genius or anything. It's just the way to do it. So this is the regime of covenant. Now, when we talk about Esther, now tonight, of course, we're going to celebrate Purim. And the thing about covenant, in whether it's you're talking about romance or whether you're talking about in the Bible, oftentimes it's very subtle. The reality of covenant is subtle. It's not like you're always talking about it. Well, we're in a covenant together, so therefore I am obligated. It doesn't work that way. It's subtle. And the concept of covenant in the book of Esther and in the story of Purim also has its subtlety. Specifically, do you know that God is not mentioned once in the entire book of Esther? He is there, but not explicitly. Isn't that interesting? Who'd have thunk it? And interestingly enough, that is one of the reasons that there was a question among the early sages as to whether the book of Esther should be included in the canon of Scripture, because you'd expect Scripture to talk about God. And it was included, and rightly so, and we all benefit greatly from that decision. But the point is that there's a subtlety to his presence and to the concept of covenant, which is nonetheless very much there. And I'm going to illustrate it with just one short little passage, but it really is a climactic passage in the entire book. So you know the story. We'll talk about it later, but you know the bad guy's name, that prototypical Amalekite whose name was Boo. Let's practice. Yeah, there we go. Good. We'll do it later more. So he wanted to kill all the Jews, right? Mordecai got wind of this, and he realizes that the only person who can help is Queen Esther, because she's loved by the king. And so he goes to his niece Esther and he says, listen, you have to go to the king and reverse this decree against the Jews. And he goes on to say this: for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for just such a time as this. Umi yodea im le'et kazot hagiyat lema'alchut. Who knows if you have been raised up for this very particular purpose. Now you see, he doesn't mention God here. And he doesn't use the word covenant. But underlying everything he's saying is the understanding that God is in covenant with Israel. He says, if you don't do the right thing, Esther, listen, deliverance from us will come from another place. Where does he get the chutzpah to be able to say that? Because in his understanding, he knows that God has made a covenant with us at Sinai. He is in relationship with us. He's committed to us, and we said we would be committed to him in return. Covenant undergirds his comment. God's going to take care of us one way or the other, because we're in covenant with him, but you really need to do the right thing. Maybe God has brought you to this point. We like the word providence around here. In his providence, he's brought you to this lofty position just so that you can do this very important thing for the sake of Israel. So, to sum it all up, whether we're in the realm of romance, very important realm, or our walk with God, living in the regime of covenant is the way to go. The covenant's real. Mordecai acted on it. Esther acted on it. Yeshua's every action is a reflection of covenant and the fact that he is making up for our side, which we didn't keep very well. You see what I mean by that? He makes up for what we didn't do, but it's all because of the covenant that God made with Israel, and by extension, with the entire human race. So his sacrificial death happened because of the covenant. and he compensated for our lack of covenant keeping. Now, in our Besorah reading today, we read about the martyrs. These are people killed at the end times by the one world government, the Antichrist, the guy who comes and really wants to usurp God's authority in the world. And that time will happen. I don't know when exactly, but let's be on the lookout for it. It's certainly something to be concerned about. And he said that, and the text says that the martyrs call out to God and say, "When will you avenge us? When will you make things right?" Why do they do that? Because they're aware of a covenant. They are aware that God is faithful to his covenant to them as those who were killed for holy purpose. So the idea is this. Our job is to find exactly what the regime of covenant looks like in our lives, both individually, right, as many of you are married, as married couples, but as friends in the community, and as part of Yeshua's kingdom. So celebrating covenant, living up as best we can to our side of the bargain, trusting God to live up for what he said he would do, it's all about covenant. And if we live in terms of covenant, I think we can be very happy, very, very productive people. So tonight, let's do a little partying and let's celebrate the covenant. Happy Purim and Shabbat Shalom.
And the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.